Today on ABCDTOS, Errand of Mercy. Hey everyone, welcome back to ABCDTOS. Well, I'm assuming you're coming back. If this is your first episode, welcome. Welcome to ABCDTOS. It's the podcast where we go alphabetically through all the episodes of Star Trek, the original series, from All Our Yesterdays to Wolf in the Fold. That's alphabetical order. I'm Pete the Retailer.
I'm Tom Taylor.
I'm John Engel.
And I'm Joe Mazel.
And today we're talking about Errand of Mercy. It's, depending on who you ask, Season 1, Episode 26. Or, production-wise, it's Season 1, Episode 27. And I wonder if that's including the pilots or not.
I think it's 20. Mm. It's definitely 27 on Prime. We have this conversation every single
week. Yeah,
we do.
We should.
It's 27 on Prime. That's all I can tell.
Right. 27 on.
It's 26 on Prime. I'm looking at the remastered one. Yeah.
27 on Netflix.
Fight. Really?
I watched it on Prime. I thought it was 27, but.
Huh? Well, it first aired.
Episode.
Now this is. It's close, but it's not. That's it. We got a bingo, everybody.
Ding, 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 ding.
Errand of Mercy first aired March 23rd, 1967. Today, the episode, Wes, you're listening to this, presuming you're downloading it on the day that it's coming out.
Wow.
It's March 23rd.
Well done, everybody.
The day we're recording it, too.
You know what? Let's take the day off.
We're recording live. I mean, this March 23rd. Yeah, exactly. Man, I'm loving this
wow. Miami
March
calendars, everybody.
Weather.
Wow.
It's obviously March 23rd.
It is.
Well, that's exciting. I don't think that's happened before.
I don't know how to react. I don't know what to do. This
yeah.
Freak out, Tom.
I am freaking out.
Freak out.
Can't you see I'm freaking out?
Oh, yeah. No, I can't.
Well, the Errand of Mercy. Well, not the Errand of Mercy. Just Errand of Mercy.
Not it's, the Errand. He's.
Yeah, you know what? It didn't seem that merciful.
I got a bunch of errands to run. What's an errand of mercy?
A long string of errands.
Well, the title of the show we probably do need to discuss. I'm not sure what the titular errand is.
Or the mercy.
Well, the mercy I can kind of see.
But the of is strong.
Of is,
of is out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Of
I think it was actually a misspelling. It's supposed to be errand of mercy.
Mercy.
Huh. Right.
Is it Aaron of Mercy, who's was the fifth Beatle? Right. At one point. That's kind of weird geographical.
So here's
joke.
Here's the description, the Google blurb. Errand of Mercy, the Federation, in a desperate attempt to thwart an invasion by the warring Klingon Empire, sends the Enterprise to Organia to offer protection. Almost, right? It's a war kind of starts out of the blue, but tensions build, a war is officially declared. It's not really an invasion, right?
Right. It's like an understood thing that both sides want this planet, right? Like, it's not, the Federation is not just protecting them from the Klingons. We want them, I'm saying we because I'm part of the Federation. We want them, we want that territory for ourselves, right? Not just
we also want it. I'm speaking for the Klingons.
Oh.
We also want it for the Klingon Star Empire.
Right.
So that's what
But it's not like, I'm not just trying to keep it from you. I want it for myself.
Now, is there an answer to the why now question here as far as storytelling? Mm. Why is this, that planet's not new.
No.
Its position in the galaxy is not new. Why is this the moment where they're both converging? Is it because the Federation's on their way there? So the Klingons are like, we can't let them have it first. Has it just been discovered? Did they say that at the beginning? I don't think so.
It sounds like they have a lot of information on, or, like a good deal of information on it.
Yeah.
Not a good deal of correct information on it.
Yeah.
I was assuming that it's basically, okay, war is declared. They draw a line and they're like, all right, this is the front. This is the, the border between our two. Like, you don't go here, I don't go there. It's like designating the difference between the two sides of the war, and Organia happens to be kind of right on it or near it. And so once they declare they set the line, they're like, all right, Organia is right on the border, let's go get them to play on our side. It's like, if it earlier there wasn't a line there, there isn't really a line there. It'd be great if there was there's a big dotted line floating in space.
Yeah. That went entirely across the entire galaxy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
We're the Tholians.
Massive line.
But see, yeah.
We could lay down a web or just a straight line.
Yeah, so what are you guys looking for here? A line, a web, a cage, a ball? What are we doing?
We just see a line and they're like,
take a look at our
challenge
sample.
Us, please.
You know, anything you want. The prices are on the back.
So we're all good. There's good Tholian impersonations, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. They're all over the place.
Now, did I misunderstand the first minutes of this episode? Like, doesn't war begin at the beginning of this episode? Like, there have been tensions between the Klingons and the Federation, but now the Enterprise has just been attacked randomly by a Klingon ship, and that's the start of the war? Like, well, that's it.
We're right before the attack, they're told to expect a surprise attack.
Right.
Making it not a surprise attack.
Yeah.
But then they get attacked, and they do seem kind of surprised when the attack hits. But then they go, just as we thought, you know, it's like,
told you.
There's a little bit of a mixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the reason that they're expecting the attack is because they're on their way to Organia, right?
I guess so.
So
were they on their way there already?
Yeah. Right.
No, I feel like they were
afterwards.
Yeah.
It's weird because they kind of talk about going to Organia, and they talk about, you know, it's possible, like, tensions are such that we could be attacked, that we should expect an attack from the Klingons that are attacked. And then Kirk says, set a course for Organia.
Okay.
But I thought the very first line was Spock saying...
I can't remember what he's saying the course for.
I thought the first line of the episode was Spock telling him that they're within range to contact the Organians. Maybe I misunderstood who they were contacting.
Memory Alpha,
you know, this
says,
general misunderstanding does not bode well for the episode.
He's the guy that warned them about the surprise attack, general misunderstanding.
He shouldn't be in charge of communications.
Right. He's like contradictory, expect a surprise attack. It's,
of course, general misunderstanding played by Don Knotts.
Don Knotts.
Where are we going now?
He replaced Norman Fell, who was...
Norman, who fell in combat.
Yeah, he fell.
Yeah. Requires mercy.
According to
or
Memory
Mercy.
Alpha, they're like, all right, they sent a message to the Enterprise saying like, hey, war is going to happen any minute now. We've drawn the line, and Organia,
the Tholians technically drew the line.
We're going to draw a line, and here's, you know, Organia is going to be right on the thing, and we don't want the Klingons to use it as a base in this war. So go.
He's
going to
be right on
first.
Ben Grimm.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's a good so they're place
it's
any.
All like it's all like pre, you know, it's like now it's like the road, it's like there's like, oh, war is inevitable, like why, you know, it's not inevitable. They're all just playing along with this because there's somewhere you know, people who are profiting from this either monetarily or you know, structurally, you know, they feel like they will get ahead if they promote war culturally, you know. It's all a bunch of lies.
Yeah.
Somebody's best interests are at hand, and it's not the bulk of the Federation nor the Klingon Empire.
Right. But I believe this is our introduction to the Klingons, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
This episode?
No.
Okay.
Yes.
No?
Well, yes. Not for us, because we saw them on Day of the Dove.
I've been watching them for years. Come on.
But for the rest of the world, it was.
Okay.
But this was the first... I mean, yeah, you guys would know. Somebody probably looked that up.
I looked it up.
Yeah, so I think you see some walking, they talk about them, you see some walking through the courtyard. That's the first time you ever see a Klingon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Kor comes in with a couple of, a small entourage.
Now, was he a Klingon? I thought he was a traitorous Capricorn.
I think he is a traitorous Capricorn.
He gets
Capricorn.
A lot of that. And then he was decapitated in the movie, but then he was still on the TV show. It was really weird.
It's really confusing.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Kor, or they say like cur a lot. Like they say it in a car.
In the back of the throat.
Kor.
Is this is harder to look up, and by that I just mean I didn't try to look it up. Is this our first chronological, have we discussed the Prime Directive yet on any episode before this episode?
I mean, we should have, probably.
Because it seems like it should come up in this episode and put an end to the episode before it even starts.
It goes down hard in this episode. Kirk,
it's just flatly
Kirk
ignored.
Beats it to death. He pummels it in one scene. It's like, it's really like, man, you're going
You ignorant
here.
Cowards!
Yeah. What are you, idiots? You people are all stupid and we're smart. We can make you smarter. You know, yeah. It's like, what the? They seem to be doing pretty good here, Kirk.
We're just going
to
throw technology at you. It's going to be great. You have no idea whether we're going to change your entire lives, upend everything you ever believed. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it would be interesting to intercut this with stuff from, you know, or even from, you know, like episodes where the main crux of it, like not only intercut it with examples of the Prime Directive and you know, people being like, oh, we can't interfere, you know, like even, and then also intercut it with the handful of episodes where it's like, hey, you know, like, struggle is what makes us, you know, human. Like, you can get anything you want and you'll be unhappy because you need to strive for, you need to, you know, toil. particular, I'm always thinking about This Side of Paradise, but like that kind of a thing where it's just, like, he's basically telling him, like, hey, just like sign up with us and we're going to give you everything. We're going to remake your whole thing so you'll have, you know, you won't have to work. So you'll just get food. And
sounds awful.
And it's like, wait, like, there are other episodes where you're specifically saying that that's that is bad for people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like the apple, like the whole part of the apple.
Right.
Anyway.
The episode or the movie?
Everything.
Or the fruit. I mean, I think thematically this works for the episode. So to me, it's not a complaint. Right. I think we need Kirk to be this aggro, you know, we've figured it out and you haven't. Why are you so happy? It's funny how everybody resents the happiness, the serenity of these people all the way.
Yeah, right.
Why are you smiling? Why are you guys calm right now? You should be angry and
stop with that.
You know, obviously, it all comes together in the end for the way they tie up the thematic part of the episode. So it works. This makes it kind of one of the true one-off Star Treks, like. The episode works on its own, but never in connection to any other. Like, once you have the Prime Directive idea, this I'm not saying the whole episode works perfectly. I'm just saying the idea of it being a solitary episode works really well in that sense.
Right.
But as soon as you mention a couple other episodes, it's like, man, Kirk is way out of bounds here. Actually, the Federation's way out of bounds sending him there.
This whole court is out of bounds.
Yeah, the whole court.
Yeah, Kirk, like, actively hates these guys. He's like, disgusted by them most of the time. Right. What do you?
They both are, which is so funny. It's like, like, you know, meant to be. It's interesting how it kind of like it's not. It never seems like we're supposed to be on either side, and maybe that's just me approaching it with a, you know, 21st century sensibility.
Yeah.
But I'm always just like, yeah, like, shut up and leave them alone. Like, what? That's all they want is just to, like, just let them sleep. Like, come on.
Yeah, Kirk doesn't come off well. Like, he seems belligerent. And I think, it's a good point. I wonder if that is, like, somehow intentional. Like, I don't know.
Totally on brand for the two genes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just like, hey man, war is dumb, and let's use, you know, science, like, you, like, with the little bit of, like, you know, the part where again, we haven't really been stepping through it chronologically, but the part where you know, they're like, Kirk and Spock are going to run out and face the Klingons kind of by themselves. They're like, oh, you're going to be killed. And they're like, oh, well, we got to do it because it's the right thing to do. And they're like, like that little kind of like, well, they're certainly brave. And, you know, that kind of a thing. That's like, you have to throw that in there. It's like, well, yeah, that, you know, can do American fighting spirit is certainly noble, but also war is dumb. So,
Okay. So with all that said, I will defend Kirk and even Kor and the Klingons and how they respond to these Organians with the fact that the Organians are, like, intentionally misleading and... I mean, okay, we got to ask the big question. Let's just ask it now.
Okay.
Why not just tell them what they can do? Why did they let any of this happen?
Couldn't they have just said, beings of light.
Don't worry, Kirk. Nothing can happen to us. Oh, of course it could. No. Check it out. Feel your phaser right now. Ow. See, we can do that to anything. And anybody that's even near us, So this episode falls apart, obviously, as soon as they do that. But you got to wonder, like, what is their point of not selling? Hey, we're a peacekeeping people, and we're able to do that by doing this instead of war. And the first conversation they have could have been that, and the whole thing could have been avoided.
Yeah,
because that doesn't... They also want they both sides to... On behalf of... I know Tom is from the Federation, you're from the Klingon Empire. I represent the Orkanians here in saying that... they don't just want to be left alone. They want these people to stop warring also. It's the actual conflict that they detest, that is abhorrent to them. And so they don't just want to be like, hey, leave us alone because we can do this. And then everybody would be like, all right, sorry. And they just keep playing war as they go on. They want them to be like, hey, look, like, stop it all over the place. And we're going to help stop your war right now, and like, without just kind of stepping in and doing it. They want them to kind of learn from it a little bit.
Yeah, so they say more than once that, like, meddling in other people's affairs is just abhorrent to them, and that does kind of make sense. That if that's true, then even, you know, giving up more information about themselves than necessary would be like a form of like, no, just, you know, we're playing everything close to the vest. We're going to let things play out. We're going to let things happen as they happen and see what happens. And then we will completely alter everything about your two races and how they interact with each other.
Until the next episode, of course.
Yeah.
Because they don't actually...
talking about this for years.
Yeah.
Kor leans over to Kirk and says, Kirk, I haven't learned a thing. it's because, yeah, obviously. But tell me, the reach, I mean, we're jumping way ahead to the end of the episode, but the reach of their power, though, is also pretty, I mean, isn't it pretty omniscient? Aren't they pretty?
It is.
Don't they even say the home planet? So if they want everybody to stop worrying, can't they just make it happen? Like,
yeah.
But again, why? Who cares about them learning? Isn't the point to have it be... not have the aggression and the war?
Interfering in their affairs, it's disgusting to them. They don't want to do it. They don't want to have to do it, and it kind of hurts them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just like, look, we're just going to say this once, like, quit around. like, and then they can't, you know, like, then they just want to, like, kind of set that down there, and then, like, everybody just behave.
Mm-hmm. But that seems like one of those points of decorum or something that for some reason outweighs the greater question. It's like, oh, we don't like to interfere. That's like, interfere if it saves people's lives. Who cares about interfering if you don't want to? It's not about etiquette here. Well, so I mean, it's one of those things.
What you're forgetting, John, and I understand why you would, because you represent the aggressive Klingon army, is that to the Organians, the Organians are to us what we are to amoeba. Like, they could not care less about what we think.
Right.
Like, we are nothing compared to their high and mighty omniscience.
Well, then why don't they just control us, then? I mean, if what we think doesn't matter to them, then what do they care?
Because it's a pain.
Yeah.
It's a
total
and again, drag, you're looking at this in a complete, like, Klingon conquer kill, like, scenario. They don't need to rule us. They, like, it's like ruling an anthill. Nobody cares.
They apparently do. They go so far as to stop everyone from warring at a certain point. It obviously doesn't matter to them.
Well, a virus.
Did the 200 people really die?
That's clean you out.
No, they don't. Nobody died. Nobody's died there in untold thousands of years.
Right. I mean, so what do they care? Like, maybe why do the thing that they do at the end?
Maybe the Organians are the dad driving the car, the station wagon, and the two kids in the back seat. And the dad would love it if the kids just got along. But as soon as they don't, he has to, like, separate them and, you know, whatever. Right. Toss one.
Well, again, they don't from the very beginning. So it's why not just do it at the beginning? I don't know. I was sitting there the whole time going, why are they being coy? Like, why are they not telling them what they can do? Mm-hmm. They keep assuring them that they're going to be okay. And they're like, oh, we'll be okay. Well, that would be infuriating if somebody looked at you with a smile and said, oh, don't worry about it. Nothing can happen to us. Well, explain, please.
Yeah, right.
Would make my job. I won't go blow up a munitions dump if you tell me.
You're just a product of your warlike culture and you can't help it.
I think I'm being very Vulcan here, if you ask me. I think I'm, like, searching for the logic, insisting upon logic where there is none.
From a TV show point of view, could part of it be that this is the first, omnipotent, powerful being? I had Charlie X, but he was a kid. Like, is this like, is, did the show go all in on the reveal of, oh my gosh, these people are actually made of light and they can do anything and they can be in more places than once in a time or whatever?
Squire Gothos comes before this episode, I believe, doesn't it?
I think it
maybe.
Does,
yeah. In, like I said, I didn't look anything up.
In both, I mean, it's a first season episode, and this is like the 27th episode. We kind of have to.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It's up there.
But still, I mean, I wonder if like they just, what, you know, they cared more about that reveal that they were these cool beings. But I'm with you, John. It's like just frustrating when you find that out. You're like, oh, well, wait a minute. This could have been a 10-minute episode.
So there, apparently there's a, unsurprisingly, there's been some discussion about this in Star Trek fan circles. In the Starfleet universe, what is that? Is that like a book? Starfleet universe is a setting of game. Pete. So it's game.
So this is a very important source material we're going for.
It's a game, huh? Like an RPG.
Gaming, like RPG kind of for tabletop setup. It's explained that the Organians' powers only work within their own star system, and thus they were unable to truly prevent large-scale wars. Their actions in the episode to stop the Federation Klingon War were largely a bluff.
Really?
Eventually, they would enlist the Interstellar Concordium to impose order on all the local races. However, in the original series comics, set between Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, that's contradicted. The comics claim that Organians prevented the two powers from going to war at all. Eventually, a war does break out, courtesy of manipulation by Yarnak and the Excalibians.
Stupid Yarnak.
Eventually convinces the Excalibians and Organians to fight each other. And as the Organians disappear, they lose control over the Federation and the Klingons. It's Yarnak.
I don't buy either of those.
Oh, that's the Excalibur.
I don't either.
I certainly don't.
The bluff thing just sounds like, let's just say they're bluffing so we can do our thing that we want to do with them.
In the 1970 novel, Spock Must Die.
Ah, I have that book.
The Klingons, the Klingons envelop Organia with an energy shield in order to neutralize the Organians' abilities to prevent war between the Klingons and the Federation. Eventually, the plot is discovered and the shield is disabled. And in retribution, the Organians deny spaceflight capability to the Klingons for 1,000 years.
That didn't quite work.
That didn't work out either.
So what are the actual terms of like what the Organians say is your two races cannot fight? Is that it? Like, is it as simple as that? Or is it like, because it is, on the one hand, it's like, well, I guess they never really did go to war in all that time, you know, until we kind of finally started working together or something. But you got your Star Trek III, you got your Day of the Dove, you know, you're fighting each other. I mean, you know, it's
you got a private little war. You got a bunch of Klingons coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's sort of a dumb thing to say if these are going to be like your main villains of the show that like you're never going to go to war with them.
But they weren't going to be that. So there's that.
Oh,
this was not supposed to be the establishment of the main villains. They wanted the Romulans to eventually be, and then they realized how much easier it was to costume and make up Klingons. And that's really, and I guess DC, that was a real sticking point to DC Fontana. She found that really frustrating because she thought the Romulans were the right race of people to fight against. And they just kind of took the easy route with the Klingons. And now look, you know, Romulans have had to kind of been reintroduced over the years. Multiple times. Like that's, I think that's part of why they chose them for Abrams' first movie, was because, hey, look, here's, you don't, you've heard of the Klingons, but here's the Romulans. And like regular people, you know, regular Star Trek fans, they're not even Star Trek fans, would be like, oh, this is new. This is a new thing. Mm-hmm. Klingons, everybody knows who a Klingon is, right?
Everybody
like, it's like knowing Darth Vader. Yeah, exactly. It's like Darth Vader a little bit. Like, even if you don't care, you know what a Klingon is.
Yeah.
So, it's weird how that, you know, that one choice, hey, it's easier to put on the makeup and costumes, was set the whole thing in motion.
So,
you know,
apparently, this could all go into a whole thing. I'm like reading now. I'm like, wait a minute. There was a previous Federation Klingon War. Because there's a war between 2256 and 2257. There's a war. That predates this. It was probably from other shows here.
Yeah.
And then this war is briefly noted. It's a brief conflict fought between the Federation and the Klingon Empire in 2267. And then it's ended by the Treaty of Organia. And the Treaty of Organia, or the Organian Peace Treaty, then carries us through pretty much. I mean, certain things has a couple of blips here and there, but in general, the peace treaty carries us through to the Kitamura Accords, which is much more fun to say.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think that this, I don't know, it we do have some blips, but it is I don't know. I like that little thread of continuity that we've got here, that even though there's we do have some fights, you know, but like overall the fights are always because the treaty was breached somehow, you know what I mean, like so establishing this and having
even trouble with Tribbles when they get in a fist fight over calling the Enterprise a garbage cow.
Okay. The Organians show up, be like, you
foul,
I told you, you're making me angry. So anyway, Errand of Mercy, it starts out, they get the alert, they get a message, say, war. Weirdly, it doesn't, they don't need to hear it. Like Uhura's just like, oh, Captain, priority message, like code one from Federation. And Kirk's like, so that's it, huh? War. And they just have he doesn't listen to the message.
Right.
It's not like, what if they're just like, hey, Jim, good
bring back bagels.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Code one. Yeah, we have a code one bagel alert here. Yeah. Code one, that's all I need to know. Code one's war or breakfast. I'm not sure which. But that's all I needed to know. Let's go to war.
But then that leads us to a little bit of exposition, which seems to fit fairly organically and lets us know everything we need to know about Klingons and the conflict. Yeah, Organianly.
Organically.
Then they say, all right, well, Kirk is like, all right, Spock and I are going to go down to the planet and talk to the Organians because we need them to not house the Klingons. Sulu, you're in charge, which is interesting. We've had Scotty in charge already in release order, and we will have Scotty. It'll be pinned down a little bit as we go, but here's a little, he gives him like a little talking to, almost like this is the first time.
Yeah, that's what I was. It's like he's there. This is his first time without a babysitter, and they're going. Yeah. The mom and dad are
all
going.
All the numbers
to the
are on the fridge. $10 on the
really
counter if you need a pizza.
Like, that's really what it feels like. He's like looking down at him. He's like, "Now you, just remember, the ship's the most important."
Don't press that yellow button on the armrest. That'll kill.
Yeah, remember that'll send somebody into.
We have fun.
Yeah, but it's different because it's usually you. Scotty, you have the con. You know, it's I'm just leaving. Scotty, you can trust. Sulu, you gotta give him a list. You know, you remember that about Sulu.
But, maybe after this time, it'll be more, more assured. But Sulu, you nailed it last time.
Well, I mean, this sets him on his journey to being the captain of the Excelsior.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, interesting. I think like after this, because I think this is probably the last time in season one. Then in season two, it's kind of like firmly established the chain of command. So like, I don't know, Scotty, this is a good point to point out. Scotty does not appear in this episode. So maybe he's doing something. Mm. Maybe he's
engineering.
Off. He's at engineering.
Shore leave.
On an errand of
a weep out of shore leave.
maybe he has the DTs.
Could be.
Yeah. He's drying out. He's
The dilithium.
They got bulks in me skin.
Well, yeah, I mean,
worse
bones for that matter.
Also not appearing in this episode, McCoy. I can't think of
so
other episodes.
So
no
McCoy is detoxing Scotty. Yeah, I think we've got it.
Or they're out on a bender together.
Or they're on a bender because they're both known to have a julep and a scotch.
Right.
First you got to tox and then you detox.
Either they're drunk or they're in some sweaty, dramatic rehab situation.
Or it would be fun to, if I was the person, if I was the type of person who was writing Star Trek comics or novels, that would be you go to this kind of episode, be like, okay, this episode doesn't have Scotty and Bones in it. Let's do a Scotty and Bones adventure that takes place during,
the
Organian
like they're off
conflict.
Somewhere and all of a sudden they get an alert that there's a war going on and they're like, oh, and now what do we do?
If we get to a certain Patreon level, we will fully flesh out our comic book of what happens with McCoy and Scotty.
Yes.
Fanfic.
Yeah, maybe anybody. Okay, let's set the number $5,000 a month.
Yes.
If someone wants to, we will write an entire comic book about Bones.
You know it's
and
worth
Scotty.
It.
Yep. You know, I'd even do it for 3,000. I'm just saying.
You know, 3,000's... I'd do it too. Who's drawing this thing? Pete, you got that?
I can try.
We all four, you know, guys. All four of us can do it.
How's your bones?
Just write bones over his head. Right. You know who it is.
Just stick me
just draw a, like a bone.
And, or just right. a bone. Yeah, two bones.
I am bones.
You need at least one more bone. But
like a picture of a Scottish Terrier is in the bone.
Right, yeah. Oh, that, there you go. It's a, yeah, it's like a Scotty, and he's digging up and some bones. So it's nothing to do with Star Trek, but it's. I just thought it would be cute. It's a dog.
Thanks for the $3,000.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Sucker. Suckers at all.
That's what you get.
Okay, so when they arrive on the planet, and the guy comes up, he says, I'm Aelborn. I immediately was like, no, you're not. You're firmly placed on the ground right now. I cannot hear that. Every time they say that name, I think they're saying Airborne. And
help me, I'm falling.
It's an awkward name. Aelborn. I'm Aelborn. I'm like, what's going on here? I'm sorry. I'm
sorry to hear that.
I just had to bring that up.
He's like, Spock, these Organians must be subject to mass hallucinations.
Yeah. This guy's nuts. Let's get out of here.
So there's no hierarchy on this planet, but he is the chairman. Do I not right. understand what a chairman is?
I'm the boss.
Thought they were the boss.
Well, it's a man made of a chair.
Yeah, I think he's just basically
that kind of chairman.
Much like the castle itself and the whole town. It's like a, what does Spock say? It's like a colloquialism or
it's not exactly point of context or something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. They're basically just as a contextual thing, so he can be like, oh, yeah, there's nobody in charge, but like we have a council, and I guess I'm the chairman of the council because he's just the person who does most of the talking, but he's not in command.
Well, he has the bigger chair, so there could be
in the middle.
I brought the bigger chair, and it for the symmetrical composition of our seating arrangement, that should go in the middle. And so I'm sitting in the middle, so I'm just the chairman.
He does call me the chairman. No. So they probably, rotate every couple of centuries.
Yeah, maybe. Weeks, maybe that's it. Would you like to have the big chair? Yes, I would.
Yes, I would. It's about time.
I just have been handed a list of the other. There are two episodes, not counting the pilots, that do not have Bones in them, don't have McCoy in them, of which this is the last. So,
oh, interesting.
There are two episodes previous to this that do not have Dr. McCoy in them. Any
right, because
want to hazard a guess?
No.
Bones is in the menagerie, is he not?
No.
The menagerie,
well, it might be
part
in the
one he is, but part two is one of the episodes.
Wow. Okay. Look at that. I got half a point.
Oh, well, you said not counting the either pilots.
Right. Yeah, okay. Not counting the two pilots. And it is it's one that we won't get to for a long time. Long time.
Space.
The Zaxxon incident.
Oh, man. Oh, wow.
Oh, is that like the one where the Segatons come and, yeah. and everything's sewn at this weird canted angle?
And they couldn't tell if it was a dragon or a robot.
Yeah, and up went down and down went up. It was really confusing.
It's What Are Little Girls Made Of?
Oh, sure. That makes sense.
Well, it makes sense that he would have, because he was still like not a featured player kind of at this point, right? He was the first season. He doesn't get that third.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
But starting with season two, he gets the credit and then he's in every episode.
So then they figured out we need Bones in every episode because the three of them is the core of the show. And
yeah,
the core of the show.
First season, he's and the rest, just like Marianne and the professor.
Yeah, that's right. He is and the rest.
Speaking of the core of the show. That also means that McCoy doesn't meet any Klingons until like midway through the second season, I think.
Ah.
So
except for the comic that we're going to write where him and Scotty, clearly they've got to be dealing with Klingons somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe not.
Who
knows? Somebody's got to pay up before we figure all that out.
Exactly.
Yeah. We'll leave you hanging.
We get an interesting line when all my stuff is kind of my notes are slapdash, not necessarily tied to the plot, so I'm just gonna bark them out.
Fair enough.
We do. Kirk has a weird line. Well, not a weird line, but an interesting line that ties into what we were talking about before, where he says, he's like, hey, look, I'm a soldier, not a diplomat.
Yeah, that's weird.
Which, yeah, I wrote that down, too.
Lots of other times, he makes a big point of being like, hey, I'm not a soldier. Look, we're an exploratory, you know, we're here to seek out new life, new civilizations and all that. But here he's just like, look, I'm just a soldier.
Yeah,
I'm not here to, like, country talk soldier. To new life forms.
I'm not here to be nice.
Yeah. I didn't come here to make friends.
I'm here to beat you up so you don't get beaten up by the Klingons.
Right.
Nowhere in my job description says I'm a diplomat. Well, actually, right, I said nowhere.
Except all those times that the diplomats came to your ship and you had to put on the diplomatic uniform.
Yeah.
It's like, think you're a diplomat, pal.
Only when he's on the ship, though. See, that's what,
yeah. Oh,
once
I see.
He's down on the surface, oh, now I'm not a diplomat.
Right, because on the surface of another planet's where you don't want to be a diplomat. That's
right.
I mean, that's called being an ambassador for the Federation. I think right. That is a diplomatic position.
And then we get the appearance of the Klingons. We've seen them in ships here. They've been attacking, and then... Kirk is kind of, you know, trying to negotiate with the Organians, who are just like, whatever, man. And then in walk the Klingons. And I forgot how cool Kor's kind of entrance is. He just kind of like bursts through the doors in a very kind of like dun, 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 dun. Like,
yeah,
here comes the bad guy strut.
Yeah,
I like it.
Did someone say Kor?
Musical number. Yeah, John Colicos says Kor. Again, we'll put this with this goes with you know, in the Savick pile, in terms of like, man, I would have liked to have seen what would have happened if he was because he was supposed to be basically like the main Klingon in most of these Klingon episodes. In Day of the Dove and Trouble of the Tribbles, that was supposed to be Kor in there, and each time he was just like, oh, hey, no, I'm busy. But I really want to. Like, they liked him and he liked doing it.
Yeah.
But he just couldn't make it until he comes back later, obviously, as in Next Generation.
Deep Space Nine.
Star Trek was never really good at threading that needle, original Trek. Like, Roger Carmel was supposed to be in Mudd was supposed to be in Trouble with Tribbles.
Right.
Who else is there? Somebody else who was supposed to return and never did, and they rewrote it. I can't remember who, but somebody we've come across before.
Yeah, I mean, they were supposed to. Well, obviously, Grace Lee Whitney had some arcs that went unfulfilled, and we brought up the Carol Marcus was supposed to be the was it
Carol Marcus?
Not
Carol. Oh, the woman from was it the woman from the Deadly Years? She was going to be Carol Marcus or something.
Yeah, I think so.
The old flame, thing for older men.
But they use the exact same kind of like plot setup in both the Court Martial and I guess Deadly Years with like having the woman show up.
Yeah, because I just totally saw Phyllis Diller when you said that. She was from Court Martial.
And so there's interesting little, you know, there's a couple of those that we've come across where it'd be like, oh, what if this person was able to kind of fulfill their arc there? But alas, no such luck. But then we do get a variety of Klingons and... I mean, I don't know. I like, we'll get to those other Klingons. We've already seen one. We've already had Michael and Sara, and we'll see another, at least one other one. But I love that it keeps like not happening that they were like, you know, they were like, oh, hey, you want to be in Day of the Dove? And he's like, yeah, oh, I can't. And then they heard another one like, all right, what about Trouble with Tribble? It's like, yeah. Wait, oh, Thursday? No, I can't do Thursday. And
we like, should find out what he was in instead of Star Trek each of those times.
I know, we should.
What was the one? I knew what one of them was. I forgot to write it down. It was a movie. It was like a pretty big movie. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
So he was doing fine.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about this scene that.
Well, where I want to throw in one that there was still he was like, oh, you're busy all the time. Why don't you set aside some time for us? We're writing an episode around Kor for season 4. And he's like, all right, great. Like anytime.
Of course.
And then season 4 didn't happen. They did it as an animated show. And they're like, we can't afford to pay John Colicos. We'll just have Doohan do it. Right. So James Doohan played Kor in that episode.
Wow.
Oh my God.
So, anyhow.
So, the scene begins with Kirk being dressed as an Organian and them dealing with the Spock, he doesn't appear to be an Organian. He's a Vulcan traitor. So they're disguising them. They're right. creating alternate identities for them.
Yeah.
Why are they in the room? You're trying to hide them. Why are they right there front and center where the Klingon, like, why not just go hide among the people? I actually was expecting that to happen for some reason. I haven't seen this episode in ages.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they're going to, when the Klingons come in, they're going to scurry off.
Right.
It's like, why didn't they?
Yeah.
Like,
why your sandwiches and we'll leave.
And create this awkward, like, oh, I'm a, I don't know my name. They hadn't even figured out his name yet. The other guy had to come up with it. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
This is not, this is reckless. That,
the fact that they, that the idea that a Vulcan traitor might be hanging out on Organia is also super weird if you think about it. Because if they are just these weird beings of light that don't do anything, like they don't, like they're not building anything, they're not consuming anything. Like, do they keep this illusion up for everybody in the galaxy, and anybody who comes through, they're like, oh, put up the castle, put up the, you know,
I mean, I guess it's chair. You know, the Klingons don't know that, so yes, they're going to maintain the illusion for them, like they're just saying, so, he's a Vulcan traitor for the sake of the Klingons, not at all them, but
and
I mean, the point is,
we meaning the Federation,
we don't want Kirk and Spock to get discovered, we're disguising them, we're why would you not also hide them?
Yeah,
I just don't understand unless unless there were a moment where Kirk said, I need to be here to see what they're doing, or it's kind of like we're playing, but they never quite do that. So I guess we can go on that assumption. But to me, I was confused the whole time. Like, well, at least you could have come up with a name for yourself and not have that guy go, oh, his name's Marlohar. You know, and it was it all seemed very slapdash.
Yeah.
The costumes are wonderful. So maybe they just spent too much time at the tailors and didn't think it through.
At Tom's house?
Yeah.
Yes, at the tailors. That's what I meant.
Hours. Couldn't get anything done.
Spaghetti night.
Yeah.
I looked it up in the background, and it seems like in between, like after Star Trek, the original series, this episode, then John Colicos, around the same time frame, it seems like he was too busy being in 3 episodes of Mission Impossible and 7 episodes of Mannix.
Wow.
Where he played at least 6 different characters. So,
Man, I was going to say Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
It seemed like the other show where people showed up.
There was a movie.
You would think they would have an agreement there somehow. You know, it's like, oh, we're still producing, you know, we're producing both of these. Let's create some kind of timeshare thing. Like, we'll swap out. Like, I'm sorry, you can be in Mission Impossible. And we need Colicos for this.
They could have a bulletin board over the, you know, water fountain or something. Right. The shared offices.
But
he was in Anne of a Thousand Days was what he was shooting while Day of the Dove was being shot. So that's why he couldn't come back for that. And I, you know, that sounds like a big movie, but I don't actually know. Here it is.
Has anyone here?
It's a Richard Burton joint. Okay. Yeah. So that's a pretty big movie for the time.
I didn't know he did. He was in the 1979 King Solomon's Treasure.
Nice.
Where he played Alan Quartermain. I can't.
Has anyone here seen an episode of Mannix?
No, I've legitimately wanted to for a couple of years now, and I just have not.
I wondered.
I want to, not so much that I want to spend like $30 on a DVD set, though.
Right. I think we've talked before about like shows that just were not in our rotation of reruns where we lived, and since we, you know, 3 of us are from roughly the same area, I wondered if that would be true that we just totally missed Mannix. We were not.
I don't remember Mannix being a rerun at all in my life. I think the first time I heard of them really was the Beastie Boys, you know,
like, really
just mentioning, I was like, what's Mannix? I knew what Barnaby Jones I'd seen.
Sure.
Yeah. That was,
and,
that was
the rotation Channel 2 in the afternoons.
Yeah.
Here, I don't know what channel, but I just remember Barnaby Jones and what's the other show I was just thinking of, but you know, for us, it was like Starsky and Hutch and Chips and those were the shows that were always on. And then it became 80s heavy with Simon and Simon and Magnum PI and Heart to Heart and things like that. So I don't know, maybe I was just a little too young for Barnaby. Maybe it would have been on TV had I been a little older. Reruns in like 1976.
Oh, it was also a Desi Lu at the time. So why didn't they just try? How could they, like, sorry, I'm too busy doing these other Desi Lu shows. I can't do your Desi Lu show.
I don't know. Seems like you had a maid. He could have just walked from soundstage to soundstage.
Yeah. I wasn't here, Mannix. Kirk?
It looks like it was, original release, September 1967 to April 1975. Mannix.
Oh, okay.
94 episodes over eight.
Yeah, it was like a huge show that people live by, and I just know it's like Hawaii 5-0 or something, but I never ever have seen it. I barely know what it's about.
Beretta that I was trying to think of, where people talk about Beretta. I never saw Beretta.
I didn't remember it ever being on TV.
Yeah,
no.
I don't know. It's just a matter. It's whatever your affiliate stations, whatever syndicated stations, your UHF channels.
Theme song by Lalo Schifrin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did all the kinds of. I mean, he did Mission Impossible.
I can't think of what the theme from Mannix sounds like either. So I'm sure it's on those TV's Greatest Hits CD.
You skip over because you don't know what they're talking about.
But because I never saw Mannix, I don't think I ever.
I used to play a lot of
season one is
stuff when.
I was going to say season one is $8 on Amazon, but it's slow in arrival time. So you know what? I'll give it a shot.
Hey, look at him go.
Not streaming anywhere. Mannix streaming?
It's probably on Pluto or something.
They probably have
it'll be streaming on Earth.
Pluto's not even a planet.
Watch Mannix on MeTV.
MeTV's
MeTV is probably running some Mannix. Let's see. Weeknights at 2 a.m. There you go.
Nice.
Set your DVRs, everybody. We're going to watch some Mannix.
MeTV edits their stuff too much, though. They chop their shows to ribbons.
Yeah, they have long ad breaks.
Anyway,
what were we talking about? Star Trek?
Star Trek.
So Kor shows up.
This stuff will definitely be in the episode.
Kor's depiction manages to be offensive on a couple of different fronts now. It's a little insensitive, maybe not offensive, but certainly insensitive. And then it's basically like he's got more or less brown face and kind of Asiatic, like hyper kind of like, they basically said like, hey, make him Genghis Khan.
And, the description was Oriental.
Yeah.
I think there was, so it was like known Orientalism. Like they were not shy about admitting it. They were straight up, hey, let's Orientalize this guy.
Right. That'll make him scarier.
But I think that could get us into discussing the Vietnam allegory that's supposed to be taking place here. Mm. So that was the idea of that. And at the time, they didn't consider that, if we're trying to talk about Vietnam on television, one side should probably be Asian, right? And and that's what we have here. I guess the conflict between the Klingons and the Federation, I guess you could say, okay, it's like Vietnam, like the Klingons were the Chinese or whatever. Mm-hmm. Who are the Organians in this allegory? Is this the dream, the fantasy of peace, I guess? Or to me, I was like, these people feel like, this feels like Tibet, this feels like the Chinese overtaking Tibet, where they're like, we're not going to fight back. I don't know. That's what I was thinking about both of those situations as being the allegory here. But I guess they refer to this as the big Vietnam episode of Star Trek. So that was their intention.
I was thinking it was Friday's Child would be more, but that's true. But we'll get to it when we get to it.
Right. Kor does have
great abs. Look at that Kor.
Look at that. Yeah, you're really engaged to his Kor.
He planks all day, all day long.
There's two notes as far as props and costumes for the Klingons that I want to talk about here. One is that we see the Klingon flip-top communicator. Which is only, apparently, according to what I read, somebody backed this up, it's only in two episodes, both of which we've covered now at this point, because the previous one was Elan of Troyes, where I was like, wait a minute, were there Klingons in that one? And I forgot their whole subplot with Klingons to disrupt everything.
They do have disruptors.
That's true. They're always disrupting. Klingon's probably doing well as a .com. They have a lot of startups because they're always disrupting different industries.
Yeah.
Kor's sash, or what do they call it? A baldric or something. That is 100% Worf's sash from the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
And apparently, upon closer inspection, it is just a burlap sacking spray-painted gold.
Nice.
Which,
wait, is Worf's is also just that?
Worf's is that. They just reused the prop.
Oh, from the first season, but not all right, through first season.
Well, what are they supposed to do? Get a new strip of burlap?
Yeah.
Because that thing always seemed...
They give them that kind of, like, more chainmail-looking one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks real metallic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for a season, he's just straight up wearing this, as far as I... So I have been told.
And there is a novel explaining how Worf came to have that exact sash, I'm sure. Well, we'll write cool. If you give us $10,000.
Yeah. They explain it has something to do with the bumpy foreheads, right? Then it's like...
I'm sure it does. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the gold sash was kind of like a smallpox blanket for the bumpy forehead.
Whoa, okay. Dang.
I'm looking now for pictures. Yeah, here we go. Oh, look at that. That's totally... that's the same sash, I bet. It's funny how much Worf's look evolves.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he really kind of, I don't like ponytail Worf. All right, this is a next gen. This is an ABCDTNG.
No, it is not.
Not yet.
And nor is it a visual medium.
Yes, no. speaking of visual
and nor can
media.
We see what you see.
When we first arrived to talk to the Yarganians, the exteriors, there's two things. There's an establishing shot of the citadel in which the Yarganian Council appears. And that is stock footage of Citadel La Ferrière in Haiti.
Oh.
So,
all right.
It'd be fun to go to Haiti and see where the Yarganians live. But then the actual kind of village set stuff is part of the backlot, Paramount backlot, which, and we've seen some of these, the exact thing before, I think, in the cage where Pike has to defend Vina? Una? No. Leela?
Vina, right?
From,
sure.
Lana.
From, like, the barbarian dudes?
Yeah, she has defended from the barbarians. Like, that was that same set of steps, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. And, so then they have lots of arguments. They put them in jail. I like Spock's, the way he accepts his prison containment. He just kind of sits down. There's a couple of different, like, Spock being essentially a computer moments in this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, like, him calculating the odds of their success, and then there's, you know, a couple of different things where they really play on. It's weird, because it's near the end of the first season, you would think that we already established all this. Yes, he's very, accurate and computer-like.
Yeah. That doesn't stop him from doing it in other seasons, too.
I guess so.
It pops up.
And he doesn't really have an ego, but he does brag about his computer brain. Like, I try to be, you know, yeah. I try to be accurate. And if you don't give the decimal point, he'll remind you that there was a decimal point.
Right. Hey, who among us hasn't been there?
I have an ego to bruise.
You've been
Spock, you do have an ego to bruise. Are you kidding?
You're mad at me because I missed the decimal point.
He's got an ego. You talking to me? No. Oh.
I was top of my class at the Vulcan Science Academy decimal class. I'll have you know.
That in the back of his head, there's like his teacher from the Vulcan Science Academy. Like, anytime he tries to, he leaves off a decimal or anything like that. But then they basically, things come to a head. They are arguing in front of the Yarganians, who then are just like, all right, look, stop this. And they zap everybody. Which reminded me of the, have you guys know about the active denial system? I can never remember the words because it doesn't exactly describe what's going on at all.
Mm.
But basically, the military invented what the Yarganians use to chill everybody out here. Like, they have a little zapper. It's like a microwave zapper thing. And they shoot it. I've seen, like, they did demos of it basically for the press. They're like, hey, stand in that circle, we're going to shoot you with this thing. And like, it's funny watching these, the reporters just freak out because they're standing there. There's no, you know, sadly, there's no like, there's no like sound. And there's no like, you know, there's no rotoscoped blast.
Yeah. No pew pew.
No pew pew at all. No pew pew eye. They are, they do, they, you just see somebody standing there and all of a sudden they're like, ha! And they like jump because it makes, you know, a patch of skin wherever it's aimed, it makes that feel like it's completely on fire.
Wow.
And there's no like, you know, there, it's, it, as far as I can tell, there's no physical damage. Like, I think you could just kind of sit there and have it. I don't think it is actual heat. I think it's just basically like, you know, tingles your nerve receptors into thinking that there's heat. So interesting. That I wonder if that was inspired, if the active denial system was inspired by the Organians, and somebody sitting around being like, hey, you know what? Like, why don't, in order to get people to fighting, what do we do? Like, I don't know, how'd they do it on Star Trek? Like, well, feel like they were on fire. Could we do that?
Remember that, like, get Science the Channel, Discovery Channel, I can't remember what, but they did that series on Star Trek and science. It was like a three-part series that I think Shatner hosted. And it was, here's all the things that you have in regular life that started with Star Trek. And they would have these people like, yeah, I watched Star Trek when I was a kid. Now I'm a nuclear physicist, or I'm a astro, you know, whatever. And there's like this like a war, you know, this warlord weapons maker who's like, I watched Star Trek when I was a kid. That's where I came up with all my ideas. Like burning you to the point of doing anything I
think you're burned.
I mean, I got to tell you guys, the cut to the Enterprise is like comedy gold. When they cut and everybody stands up and it Woo! Looks like it's going to become a Batman, you know, like Bat-toosie scene. Like everybody's just going to start dancing. It's
I wonder
crazy.
If they did, like, did they just say, okay, like, go? Did they clap? Did they play a loud noise so everybody could be a little bit startled? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, because it's.
No, they actually burned them all.
They microwaved them. Yeah,
they did. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're working on this new thing we got from the Department of Defense. Everybody sits still.
Decay.
Maybe so. They basically say, "Hey, you knuckleheads, cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna make you feel fire." And then they just kind of like they have a moment like they're all like they all get very defensive of their. Ironically, they get very defensive of their. Offense. they get very you know, like belligerent about not being. They're like, no, we need to fight. Like, you can't stop us from fighting. That's not right. And then like eventually it kind of clicks in, but like at first they're very just kind of like, no, we need to do this. Like, we're, you know, and it is a little bit like, you know, kind of calming somebody down from a, you know, somebody who wants to fight in the parking lot, you know, and you're like, no, dude, chill mm-hmm. come on, like, just take it easy.
Well, and it's good writing. Like, this is where the thematic thing comes full circle, and it's attached to like something that's said in the first act, which is Spock saying humans have an interesting way of getting what they don't want, right? Mm-hmm. Which is Kirk is arguing vehemently for something he does not want.
Yeah.
Like, Kirk does not actually want war. They were trying to avoid all this. That was what they came to the planet for. I was like, we need to avoid this. But if you're going to get attacked, we need to show you how to do it. And then it gets to the point where he's so worked up about this concept of war that he's fighting for the idea. It's like, wait a minute, dude, what are you arguing for, man? You don't want this. Like, aren't you glad that we stopped you guys from doing this? And it's like, oh, yeah, Spock told me earlier. And I love the directorial. We haven't mentioned John Newland. I mean, I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about him, but he was the director of this episode. I liked the visual choice of having the realization of what's happening. For Kirk, it's fairly normal, just a little close-up. And then for Colicos, it's like a really tight close-up, almost like fisheye.
Eating the camera.
Because it would be more, I think it would be even more sobering of a revelation for a Klingon, right? To be like, I can't fight right now? Are you kidding me? Yeah. He's like really completely baffled and shocked and kind of hurt. And I like that choice to come in a little closer on him.
Interesting. I'm looking up John Newland now. I hadn't realized that he was a director, actor, and producer.
Yeah. His last directing, I think it was his last directing credit, really stuck out to me because I was just talking about
Whiz Kids,
the short-lived 80s show Whiz Kids the other day.
I just pulled it
starring
up.
Starring Matthew Laberteau from Little House on the Prairie. And,
all right.
And Alf's sister, or whatever you want to call it. The girl who's the sister on Alf.
Right.
Mabel and, King from What's Happening was a villain in an episode.
And the detective, really? I've forgotten that guy's name, from Barney Miller. He was one of the Barney Miller guys as the main detective.
Oh, Wojo Howitz?
Yeah, he's the cop. So it's a bunch of like kids who are hackers. So we're talking about 80s hackers here.
I know.
And they help him solve crimes.
You may be shocked to learn it did not. It was a TV show that came out really close to War Games.
Exactly. Right. It was right on the heels because War Games was 82 and I think this show came out in 83.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And ran to 84. But my sister had a huge crush on Matthew Liberteau. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to pronounce it correctly. I don't know if I am, but weird, obscure things we're talking about. We all know him as Albert on Little House on the Prairie.
I think I've only seen like the beginning of the opening credits and the end of the end credits of Little House on the Prairie, but I never watched the show. Well. It was always just like on before or after things that I wanted to watch. And that's what it's like. It's like Taxi, where I didn't watch a lot of Taxi. I just would catch the beginning, opening, or a closing theme.
You catch the Taxi?
Yeah, I didn't catch the Taxi.
You missed the Taxi. I saw every single episode of Little House on the Prairie at least once. My sister was obsessed with it. She read
Little House on the Prairie is a show that I like. Actively, it's not like I hate it, but I feel like actively antagonistic towards it because it was a show that would be on. I think for years it was like in that 5 o'clock spot right after cartoons, and it's a when it was syndicated. And I'd watch it with my grandmother when it was on the air, but I was a child and had no choice as to what I was watching.
Right,
but it was one of these things. It was like, you're kind of promising me cowboys and you're never delivering.
You know what?
And episodes that would have gunslingers in it would be like, well, let's find a way not to fight. I'm like, what are you doing?
We'll make
Paw,
them a pie.
Paw is going to talk him. Of course, Paw can kick your ass. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. Paw could kick your ass, but he's not going to unless you really push him. And he's going to figure out how to talk you into not being violent. Yeah, that show is a socially raw show. Like, a lot of people don't remember, there were like sexual assault episodes, there was
child blindness, child death. Made me realize the power of the internet and like the hive mind of the internet, because for years I was only my sister and I remembered the episode, the two-part episode about Albert's young girlfriend being attacked by a clown and getting pregnant and falling off a ladder and dying.
Yep.
And everyone was like, you are making that up. That was not on Little House on the Prairie. Shut up. And then slowly, like, articles and like YouTube videos of the guy in the woods with the mask and the stuff and everything. I'm like, oh my God, I wasn't alone. Wow, there are people out there who understand.
It's completely crazy that that happened on television.
Absolutely.
And it was like ostensibly a children's show.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're really getting off the rails. We're talking about Little. Some people are like, God, I hated Little House on the Prairie too. Why are you talking about that?
Yep.
Well, because of Whiz Kids, that's why.
I can't think of a more diametrically opposed show to Star Trek than...
Yeah, they're
not really.
They don't go anywhere. They're always there.
We got here.
There's no trekking. There are no stars.
No.
There's no prairie.
Well, there's stars in
Star
the sky when the sun goes down.
how did we get... Oh, yeah, we got there through the director.
Whiz Kids.
John Newland.
Yeah.
But
he did a lot of Mannix too, right? He was a Desi Lu guy, it looks like to me too, because I thought he did Mission Impossible. Maybe
I was just reading. He did. He created and hosted and wrote and directed The Next Step Beyond, like the sequel to One Step Beyond. exactly.
I don't know whether I'm happy or disappointed that Madness never released. Like their reunion album was never called that.
it's not
they
too late.
They could still come back and do a. Wasn't aware of that show, but now I know that it was a pet project of John Newland. so they get back the Organians. Now, did we all watch the remastered ones here, or did anybody watch
both of them? I watched
the remastered.
What did the Organian transformation look like in the original? I don't recall.
See, actually, okay, I said I watched both of them. I did not have time to watch the last, like, 10 minutes because we started recording.
Right.
So nobody watched that one? No. I didn't know that was the question you were going to ask.
I assume that it was just a slightly less pretty random ball of light.
Yeah, I can picture them just doing like, it's like a little thing that all of a sudden flashes and you can't really see anything.
Let's look.
Yeah, again, I'm not opposed to most of these special editions as is.
Yeah. Me neither.
I did want, I'm kind of disappointed that Airborne didn't come back.
Well, neither did Airwolf. What are you going to do?
It was a cool, like, or the Arganians in general. I feel like we should have revisited this. Do we see them again in an animated thing or in any? Do we ever revisit them, or it's just like, hey, we're not supposed to, so we don't?
I mean, all you do is just get real, if you revisited them, you just get real frustrated because they're sitting around smiling. It works all the time. You don't want to go back there.
Not telling you about their massive powers.
Peter Bracco is one of the Organians, and he was in Spartacus and One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest. And that's interesting. He was in a bunch of stuff. Anyway, the I'm trying to see if we have any other interesting characters on this. There's one. One of the Organians is also played by the same guy who plays Brent, who is also in the episode. So, like Frank Da Vinci, who plays Mr. Brent, one of the crew of the Enterprise, is also one of the Organians, which is interesting. Link to duty.
He's a spy.
Did we forget to talk about this? Did this happen already in a different one, or was this
no?
A separate...
We didn't forget to talk about it. So, what do we think of this episode, guys?
Basil Poledouris, the composer.
He's in a couple episodes of Star Trek, right?
Yeah, he's in. This is, I think, the first time that we see him. I'm looking for.
Kansas City born Basil Poledouris.
Oh, well, you could tell by the name.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I never thought he was from like Poland or something, or from Greece. I always assumed, well, he did Conan, Sword and Sandal movie. He must be from Greece or whatever. I think it's a Greek name. I feel bad. Maybe it's not. But yeah, I always assumed he was a Greek. You know, I make big scores for movies. I didn't expect him to be from like down the road from where I live.
Hi, I'm Basil.
Hi, I'm from Kansas City.
It looks like, yeah, this is the first. We'll see him two more times. Alphabetically, this is the first. We'll see him. Somebody make a note. He's in this, he's in Obsession, and he's in Patterns of Force. So,
all right.
Here he is a Klingon, later he's a red shirt, and then he's a Nazi. So that's an interesting triple threat there.
Sure is. I think we do have to quickly at least acknowledge the Force 4. I believe it was called the Mind Ripper.
This bit of
technology the Klingons have, which is really, really useful in any situation, and got completely dropped from all Star Trek lore, as far as I know.
I think it was mainly a bluff. That could the Mind Ripper could be their Corbomite, essentially.
Didn't they use it on Spock?
It doesn't do anything. We used it on him, and we didn't get anything out of him. So I think.
But he says, "Don't underestimate it. My mind is very disciplined." Blah 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 blah.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe he was super guarded against it, thinking it was going to be really powerful, so he doesn't really know how powerful it was not.
And they were like, hey, the Vulcan will fall for it because they're so arrogant about their brains that...
Turn it up to 11.
Must have... Yeah. Nobody's ever resisted it at this
not
level.
Not even a brilliant Vulcan.
It's like a TV remote control. They're just like, yeah.
And like,
maybe you're right, Pete. I don't know.
Like, I was hip, so it was tough, but I was able to withstand it.
Yep, I'm awesome.
I think it's a bluff. I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm also looking up the other kind of. I feel like that was we almost missed Basil Poledouris there, so I want to make sure that there's no other. It's the type of thing where people are going to be like, "Hey, you totally forgot about Jack Benny was one of the Organians." Like, wait, what?
Jack Benny. Well, one of those Organians, the guy who can kind of see what's happening. The first guy that says, hey, they're here. The Klingons are here. And Kirk's like, how did he know that?
Yeah.
There's the one scene where Kirk gets real mad and he goes and takes the chairman Airborne and flips his chair around. Right. So it's framed up with Kirk and Airborne. And then behind him is that guy. And that guy lips every word that they're saying. Like, yeah, he's like really? Looking at them and his mouth is moving with every line. Like, and then he gets a line like, maybe you should just give him what he wants.
That's
like,
awesome.
Man, he was like really waiting for his line there. He's like, it comes after he says this. So it was really weird.
I don't see any there's one guy, there's John Blower, appears in a ton of episodes.
What? Never mind. I was gonna make a joke, but maybe it was gonna be a little blue for this.
Yeah, a couple ran through my head, and
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, wait,
maybe that's where they should.
How
stay.
Did they find out about my alternate?
You know, if we're literally going to list everybody in this episode, we really should mention John Abbott.
Yeah, John Abbott kind of play, he is Airborne.
Yeah,
yeah, he's Airborne. He was also, he was the voice of the wolf in the Jungle Book. He also is in a great episode of The Munsters where he plays Dr. Frankenstein the IV, who builds Johann, who's basically Herman's brother.
Hmm.
Okay. But he's more of a wacky Herman Munster, if you know what I mean. So, Lilith, though, but he looks exactly like them. So Lilith takes him on a vacation, and oh my, does chaos ensue.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Also, in that episode, Dr. Frankenstein the IV had mind control powers over Johann Munster.
Hmm.
Therefore, he was prepping for his role as Airborne.
Oh, I
thought you were going to say, therefore, we can deduce that John Abbott himself has mind control powers.
That's what I was thinking. You know, it's
that's
like,
why he was cast.
That other guy who got typecast as the town drunk, who's like, well, he probably... If you just keep casting this guy drunk. As the drunk, you know, why can't I remember his name right now? But Porkins, you know, who's also Major Eaton, and he played, Piggy in another movie or something like that. He's always like, yeah. But
Jacques Buffet.
Yeah.
In the French war film.
Eidolaticus.
Steak and Shake. Admiral Steak and
Eidolaticus.
Shake.
In Greek. Nel Sid.
Eidolaticus is actually the name of the character that Bam Bam Bigelow played in a commercial for Cap'n Crunch, I think.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. A friend of mine worked on that commercial, and it was just, I don't think they mention it in the thing, but Eidolaticus was the name of the character. So.
Eidolaticus. Wow. Oh, I love it when people make funny puns out of Greek names and things. Sir, anytime where it's something, sir, something a lot. I think that's always funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like sir shakes eats a lot from the Burger King gang. Yeah. Anyway, we are so far afield from this.
Let's get
back to the field. How do we feel about this era? One quick note. Dickens.
Oh, Nicholas Nickleby.
Yeah. Yes. They're like, hey, this isn't based on Shakespeare. It's based on Dickens.
Oh, it's Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. The next one will be To Kill a Mockingbird. If you read it in school, we named an episode after it.
But how do we feel? I'm struggling a bit to put, I guess it has to be a command episode, like a lot of them, because it's more about Kirk and the actual kind of, mission of the Enterprise. It's about the prime directive thrown out the window and lots of other, issues, but it's more about that. It's not, they don't science their way out of anything. And I don't think it's not slapped at, it's certainly crafted with an idea where, granted, it contradicts some other stuff. So, but it's not slapdash enough to be a red shirt or an engineering episode, I don't think. I mean, I said it has to be a command episode.
Mm-hmm.
How I feel about it is going to be tough, because I feel like it was almost like I felt like I was at a play, but I was watching it with my kids and they lost interest pretty quickly and they started just running around and jumping off the couch and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, I would be involved in this dialogue, I think, if there weren't, like kids throwing Cheerios at me right now. So.
Mm-hmm. Not sure.
Maybe. No? Maybe not. Maybe your kids had the right idea. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Dialogue-wise, it gets a little repetitive, to be honest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like a lot of the scenes are like, yeah, you kind of had this conversation already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if we're grading now, I'll just go ahead and give it a, I'm going to give it a C+.
Hmm.
And the only reason I give it a plus is because of John Colicos.
Mm.
He has two C's in his name. So C+.
Oh, there you go.
No, it's because I like, this is like a quintessential C episode to me. Just like right down the middle. Except it's got Klingons. It's the first one that introduces Klingons. And I love John Colicos from Battlestar Galactica and everything else I've ever seen him in. So he gets one little notch up. But it's not a great episode. I mean, it's, I think that we, the way we talked about it, I'm not sure how you guys are going to end up grading it, but it didn't feel like we were like, hey, this was cool. Really, it was just kind of like, what are they doing here? Oh, that must be why, yeah. I guess. So C+ for me.
All right.
I was going to give it a C, and then you mentioned that you gave it a C+ because of John Colicos. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I should. Nah, it's a C. It's like there's enough in it that like the whole Organian thing makes little enough sense to me that it can't be better than
it's definitely not clobbering time.
Yeah.
That's
we
right.
Believe in violence.
We find clobbering abhorrent.
Clobbering makes us sick. Please quit it with the clobbering. Yeah, I'll just give it a straight C because it is a little boring and a little repetitive, and I kind of don't know what the point is. Maybe I should give it a C-. No, I'll give it a C. Because
well,
it is, I mean, first point
is.
Out, you got to give it points right. for that. Yeah. Spock's kind of cool in it. I like Sulu getting the con. I'm realizing more and more that the only way that I can navigate the grading of these is, I mean, like we've said before, kind of grading them against other Star Trek. So it's like, would I want to watch this one again? And no, not really. I mean, I wouldn't seek it out, but if it was on, it's like, oh, Star Trek, awesome. You know, but since I wouldn't seek it out, I think it's just a C.
Hmm. I'm going for C+. The C for Colicos, the plus for the fact that when they're in when Kirk and Spock are in disguise, they're still wearing yellow and blue.
Nice.
Very nice.
That is nice.
For their sakes, so they wouldn't get confused.
Mm. Right. Which one are you?
Yeah.
But I was a captain. Oh, all right.
Well, I think I'm going to follow overall suit and go with a C+ as well, because I did find myself, I feel like I was enjoying it, but I was distracted, and maybe it wouldn't, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't be enjoying it. Maybe if I was wrapped, I would be like, eh, that was boring. But the fact that I was distracted enough that I was like, I do like this one, but it did seem, I don't want to make it sound like being talky is a bad thing, but it did, it seemed like a little, like, for what it built up, especially the payoff was just kind of like, meep, 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 like, here we go, like, we're made of light. Oh, but right. The plus definitely for me comes from Pure Energy, which we had discussed previously, and then one of you guys threw in the Leo pointing meme at it, and I loved it. Man, I went and I had to go listen to that song again after that because
yeah, me so, too. I immediately listened to it.
Yeah, I remember distinctly that being such a pop hit. I remember. Mm-hmm. Not dancing to that as I stood awkwardly on the side of the gym.
I wish I could dance to this, but I cannot.
All right. So overall, it's the oft-forgotten Enterprise C that one. They do not say Errand of Mercy in the title, so that's another no there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We got that's it for the E's.
Wow.
We're done with Easy Street.
Next is not the E.
A, B, C, D, E, and now we're up to the Fs.
Oh, boy.
Will any of the Fs
That was
Fs?
A surprise for me.
Who knows?
Maybe there weren't any Fs.
We will start.
Are we gonna skip any letters? Yeah.
We will eventually. Well, before too long, we'll skip some letters. But we're not. We so far haven't skipped any letters because we're going straight from the E's to the Fs, and we're going to For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky, the longest
Nothing
title.
Nothing pretentious of that title at all.
No. Tune in next week when we continue to say the title of that episode.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Hopefully you join us. Hopefully you are following us on Twitter at ABCDTOS. And hopefully you support us on Patreon at ABCDTOS.com/Patreon, which should bring you to our Patreon page where currently, about once a month, we do a loose-knit discussion based on one of the animated episodes of Star Trek, and we're also open to other ideas of doing other fun stuff. And hey, if you support us there, you have an open line of communication. You tell us what to do. You say jump, and we'll say how high and how much. But other than that, we'll say how much. We'll say.
Oh, yeah.
They say jump. We say how high, how much, and
okay.
How can I help you?
There you go.
And then also next week, we'll say, "For the world is hollow and I have touched the sky," here on ABCDTOS.
Pew pews are bad.
Was the Enterprise C the one that Cameron is the captain of?
No, that's B.
Oh, that's B. You're right.
I want to say
E for busted.
John, the woman, the captain of the Enterprise C was on Columbo.